The opinions expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Murderish podcast. Sensitive topics are discussed. Listener discretion is advised.
When a violent crime is committed, detectives might look into a suspect's background and analyze their relationships to determine what drove them to kill. Sometimes there's a clear motive, but oftentimes there isn't. During Memorial Day weekend of 2020, the peaceful town of Willington, Connecticut, became the setting of a violent rampage, with the perpetrator leaving behind a trail of carnage, trauma, and destruction. A six-day manhunt would follow. As police pieced together the mayhem, a daunting question emerged about the man responsible for all the chaos. Why? This is Jamie, and you're listening to Murderish. Join me in exploring a case involving a confusing crime spree that left two people dead, one badly injured, and two others emotionally scarred. This case takes us to Willington and Derby, two suburban towns in Connecticut. Willington is located about 25 miles northeast of the state capital of Hartford, while Derby is in southwestern Connecticut and has a much larger population than Willington. Willington spent a large part of its history as a farming community into the 19th century. Its modernization came with the introduction of factories and mills. In the present day, the town is still sparsely populated. One man's 2020 crime spree in the rural town disrupted the serenity Willington residents had always known. Theodore E. Demers, Sr., who everyone called Ted, wasn't a lifelong resident of Willington. The former Marine was born in Hartford, but he'd long ago decided city living was not for him. Ted found the greatest joy in the great outdoors. He loved to hunt, kayak, canoe, and hike. When Ted put down roots in Willington with his wife Cindy, he knew he'd found the perfect place to call home. Ted and Cindy raised their two sons in a modest home surrounded by woods. The Demers family spent countless hours immersed in nature, from the time the boys were old enough to walk through their college years. Their peaceful home on Myrtle Road was a safe place where Ted found comfort, simplicity, and solitude from the often complicated outside world, as his obituary would later state. It was an ideal setting for the business Ted and Cindy launched together. Ted was a talented woodworker. He'd built a reputation around town for producing high-quality custom furniture. Cindy handled accounting for the business, which started with local sales and later reached a wider customer base online. According to Fox News, Ted's creations were sold on CustomMade.com under the store name Everlasting Woods. Woodworking was Ted's passion, and he was more than happy to take others under his wing. He used his spare time to teach his trade to local troubled youth. In May of 2020, Ted and Cindy were weeks away from becoming grandparents for the very first time. The excitement they felt was palpable. Ted's sister-in-law, Pat Jones, told NBC Connecticut that Ted just kept talking about what he was going to share with this little one, all of the things he was going to teach him and do with him, from walking out in the woods and building swings for him and teaching him about nature, because that was Ted's world. Tragically, Ted would not live long enough to meet his grandson. Even at 62, Cindy recognized Ted was as good-natured and selfless as the day they met. His kindness would sadly be his undoing. On May 22, 2020, just after 9 a.m., Ted was working outside in his yard when he saw a young man walking down the road alone. It was in Ted's nature to offer help, so he asked the stranger if he was stranded. The stranger replied that he'd crashed his motorcycle down the road. Without hesitation, Ted offered the young man a ride back to his motorcycle. Ted headed back inside to grab the keys to his ATV, and he told Cindy he'd return shortly. 5 minutes after watching her husband drive away, Cindy was visited by a frantic neighbor who was visibly injured. Something awful had happened. As Ted and the stranger rode past the neighbor's house, the neighbor had spotted something sticking out of the top of the young man's backpack. As Ted's sister-in-law, Pat Jones, later told NBC Connecticut, the neighbor got very concerned, very unsettled, like something's strange here. And a few minutes later, he heard this awful shrieking. The injured man and neighbor was later identified as 80-year-old John Franco. When John heard a commotion outside his house, he rushed to the scene of the chaos. He found his neighbor, Ted, badly injured, and he sprung into action. By lending a helping hand, the elderly man unknowingly placed himself in grave danger. Cindy was understandably alarmed upon seeing Frank injured and frantic. She rushed down the road to find Ted lying on the ground and bleeding profusely. The young man who'd attacked both men was gone. It was almost as if he'd never been there at all. As reported by the New York Post, John Franco lost part of his ear and several fingers during the random attack. For more than a week, he was in critical condition before undergoing a series of surgeries at Hartford Hospital. Ted Demers was not as fortunate. While waiting for emergency services to arrive, Ted died in Cindy's arms. In just a short window of time, Cindy Demers lost her husband of 42 years. As stated woefully in Ted's obituary, Ted was doing something he had done a million times before and would have done a million times more if not for a simple and cruel twist of fate. He simply offered a hand to a stranger in need. The entire incident did not make sense to Ted's loved ones. They couldn't fathom what Ted could have done to deserve such a heartless death. According to the Connecticut Post, Chief Medical Examiner James Gill cited Ted's cause of death as sharp force and chop injuries of head with sharp force injuries of torso and extremities. A few hours after Ted's death, detectives identified a suspect through various leads. Several witnesses provided a physical description of the young man who'd appeared in the neighborhood. Witness accounts described him as a white male, standing 6'4" and weighing around 240 pounds. Investigators cast their suspicion on 23-year-old Peter Manfredonia. While canvassing the area, detectives learned that Peter had in fact known someone in the Demers neighborhood, a woman he'd dated before. According to Oxygen, the anonymous woman told police she'd broken things off after learning Peter had hacked into her social media accounts. As reported by NBC Connecticut, Peter had not taken the rejection well and was harassing his ex to the extent that her family had suggested a restraining order. Heightening suspicions about Peter, the woman also confirmed to investigators that he owned a motorcycle and had several samurai swords in his apartment. Peter Manfredonia had no other ties to Willington. He'd actually grown up on the same street as Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter Adam Lanza in Newton. Following the Sandy Hook tragedy, Peter had actually participated in various fundraising efforts for the victims' families. Peter was a 2015 Newton High School graduate, where he was reportedly an honors student and celebrated football player. He attended the University of Connecticut and chose to double major in finance and mechanical engineering. While Peter's academic and social life reveal nothing extraordinary, his family life was a different story. He was the product of divorce. Peter's mother was a decent role model as a teacher at the same high school he attended, but his father had a recent run-in with the law. According to the Connecticut Post, in April 2020, Robert Manfredonia was facing charges of second-degree sexual assault, 2 counts of risk of injury to a minor, and 2 counts of providing alcohol to a minor. It's unknown if Peter was aware of the charges against his father. Could the knowledge of his father's charges have brought Peter to his breaking point? Or did rejection from the girl he dated tip him over the edge? I spend a lot of money on clothes for my 10-year-old, only to have her tell me they're itchy or they're pinching her waist. I recently found Posh Peanut, and I am so impressed by their clothing items crafted from bamboo viscose. One touch, and you'll immediately notice the difference in quality. Posh Peanut garments effortlessly stretch as your child grows, offering 4 times more flexibility than cotton. Designed to endure and endorsed by kids, Posh Peanut creates meticulously fashioned, elegant attire for families. Yes, they have adult items too. From charming florals to beloved brands like Hot Wheels, Disney, Hello Kitty, and Barbie, the Posh Peanut collection features something for everyone and boasts luxurious soft bamboo viscose that stays plush wash after wash. With a fabric quality 4 times more elastic than cotton, their clothing adapts to your child's growth while remaining breathable and free from harmful chemicals, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. I'm going to be a grandma for the very first time, and I ordered the softest and cutest Posh Peanut PJ set for my grandbaby. And oh my gosh, it is beyond luxurious and stylish. Join over 1 million satisfied parents and discover why Posh Peanut has become a favorite among celebrities and influencers alike. Though we can't reveal names, you might recognize a few. Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code MURDERISH. Go to poshpeanut.com/murderish and use promo code MURDERISH for 20% off your first order. That's poshpeanut.com/murderish, promo code MURDERISH. I'm a proud mom, not only to my 3 kids, but also to my 2 dogs. As members of my family, they deserve the highest quality food. That's why my boys, Shadow and Clipper, get Nom Nom. Nom Nom offers tailor-made dog food crafted to suit your pup's taste preferences and specific dietary needs. Dogs crave delicious meals just like we do, but their nutritional needs differ from ours. That's why Nom Nom's recipes, developed by accredited veterinary nutritionists, are packed with essential nutrients, freshly prepared, and conveniently delivered right to your doorstep at no extra cost. Their meals feature 100% premium ingredients with no unwanted fillers or questionable additives. With over 40 million meals served, Nom Nom is the trusted choice for discerning pet owners who want only the best for their furry friends. Whether you prefer to shop at Chewy.com, PetSmart stores, or have it delivered directly to your home, Nom Nom ensures your dog's favorite recipes are available whenever and wherever you need. Say goodbye to dull dog food and give your dogs a reason to wag their tails at every meal. I'm dedicated to providing Shadow and Clipper with nothing but the best food, and so can you. Nom Nom today, Nom Face assured, or your money back guaranteed. Nom Nom is now available at Chewy.com and your local PetSmart stores, or for 50% off your no-risk trial box, go to trynom.com/murderish, spelled trynom.com/murderish for 50% off your first subscription order. The day after Ted Demers was killed, an extensive search was launched to find Peter. Local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies all got involved. As an investigative team, they worked tirelessly to track him down by interviewing witnesses and analyzing evidence from the scene of the fatal stabbing. According to a warrant cited by the Newton Bee, during early processing of the area near the attacks, a samurai-style sword was found. A white motorcycle helmet was also recovered not far from the scene, along with a red sport bike, Peter's cell phone, and a wallet containing Peter's driver's license. A dark-colored shirt was also located in a stream, as though an attempt was made to wash the shirt clean. Even more incriminating, a box of shirts identical to the one in the stream was found during a search of Peter's off-campus apartment. And then there were the writings on display in Peter's apartment. Disturbing messages scrawled across one wall in his handwriting read, "We saw what happened when Adam snapped. Now they see what happens when I snap," according to the Connecticut Post. Through interviews with Peter's loved ones, detectives learned their suspect had a history of battling anxiety and depression. They would also soon learn that the crime spree was far from over. On May 24th, 2 days after the Willington attacks, Peter appeared on law enforcement's radar once again. Almost 70 miles away, in Derby, Connecticut, an abandoned vehicle was spotted. It was registered to someone in Willington. State troopers forced entry into the home of the car's owner, thinking they might find Peter there. Instead, investigators found another victim. 73-year-old Donald Hipsky was found physically unharmed. He told investigators that a man matching Peter's description had held him hostage for over 24 hours. Donald's captor had zip-tied and duct-taped him to a chair in the basement. Donald tried to convince his captor to turn himself in, but according to the Hartford Courant, the man said he wanted 2 good weeks until he was either killed in a police shootout or was captured and given the death penalty. As reported by the Connecticut Post, Donald told investigators his captor had stolen several guns, some food, and his truck during the home invasion. It was the same truck that had been found abandoned in Derby. It was clear the situation with their suspect was intensifying. Because the stolen truck had been found close to Derby's Osborndale State Park, there was reason to believe that Peter might still be in the area. Multiple police assets, including canine teams, drones, tactical teams, and negotiators, were used to scan the park and its surrounding areas. The search turned up no results, and time was not on law enforcement's side. A warning was issued to Derby residents that an armed and dangerous suspect was on the loose. It seemed like their suspect was always one step ahead, evading capture. A few hours after learning of the home invasion, at around 11 a.m., Derby police received a request for a welfare check of 23-year-old Nicholas Aisley. He happened to be a former classmate of Peter's. It would be an exaggeration to call Peter and Nick friends. They were more like acquaintances in high school. On occasion, Peter would buy weed from Nick. Both men were athletes in those years, so they knew of each other but had never forged a strong relationship. Nick and his identical twin brother were born in 1997 in Stamford, Connecticut. When the twins were 5, the Aisley family relocated to Sandy Hook. The boys also had 2 sisters. Nick's passion was for music and art, though he'd developed a love of gardening in his early 20s. He'd started working with his father, who owned an irrigation business. Nick intended to take over the business someday, whenever his father decided to retire. In recent years, Nick had moved into an apartment in Derby with his longtime girlfriend, Shannon Spies. They were very much in love and envisioned a bright future ahead. But it wasn't all smooth sailing for the Aisleys. Nick's younger sister, Jessica, was a survivor of the Sandy Hook school shooting. Yet even that extreme trauma could not prepare her for the pain about to be inflicted on her family. Like so many other people throughout Connecticut, Nick had heard on the news that Peter was wanted for the Willington attacks. They had no reason to believe that Peter planned to come after Nick, but the couple made it a point to lock their doors and windows. According to the Hartford Courant, at 5:45 a.m. on May 24th, Peter broke down Nick's front door. Nick shouted to Shannon to call 911 immediately, but Peter followed her into the bathroom and ripped the phone out of her hands. Citing later testimony, Fox News reported that a panicked Shannon ran into the living room and curled up into a ball near the front door. Moments later, she heard shouting. With her eyes clenched shut, Shannon held her breath as she heard the pop of shots fired. The unmistakable sound caused Shannon to scream. Her exclamations were quickly silenced by a gun pointed toward her face. In an eerily calm and collected manner, Peter told Shannon that he had shot Nick in the head. According to the Hartford Courant, Peter stole roughly $7,000 in cash that was sitting on the living room table. Then he ordered Shannon to grab her car keys. Both Shannon and Peter climbed into her Volkswagen Jetta, with Peter in the back seat, pointing a gun at the back of Shannon's head. He instructed her to drive. Nick had given his life to save Shannon. Now, all she could do was hope that she'd make it out of this alive. Before a welfare check could be carried out on Nick, Derby police responded to a call from John Aisley, Nick's father. John had found his son's body lying in a pool of blood, a sight that would forever haunt him. The multi-agency investigative team now had a link between the abandoned truck in Derby and the scene of Nick's murder. As reported by the Connecticut Post, detectives used security cameras to track Peter's movements from the stolen truck directly to Nick Aisley's home. Through camera footage, detectives established that Shannon's spies had been abducted. There was no telling where Peter intended to take her or what he might do next. Shannon was held at gunpoint for approximately 7 hours before Peter let her go. Surprisingly, he dropped her off at a rest stop near Columbia, New Jersey. She was found physically unharmed, but visibly shaken. Shannon would later tell detectives that Peter never touched her except when he gave her a hug and apologized for killing Nick. A more extensive manhunt got underway, with state police agencies from Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania all searching for Peter. By the afternoon of the 24th, Peter had been sighted in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, which was over 144 miles from Derby, Connecticut. Using surveillance footage, Pennsylvania State Police were able to release a video clip of the subject to alert law enforcement agencies across several states. According to the Connecticut Post, the footage showed Peter walking along railroad tracks behind a local Walmart while carrying a large duffel bag. Investigators had reason to believe guns stolen during the Willington home invasion were stowed in the bag. Knowledge that the fugitive could have an arsenal of weapons was particularly troubling to police. Adding to their concern was the inability to know what Peter was planning to do next. The next potential lead on Peter's whereabouts happened the following night. A black Hyundai Santa Fe was reported stolen close to the area where Peter was seen the day before. At that time, investigators could not confirm whether Peter had committed the auto theft. No matter how minor or tentative, any sighting was useful in hunting him down. On May 26th, police in Duryea, Pennsylvania, announced a possible sighting. Caught on footage from a local fire station, police reported seeing a man hiding behind a dumpster and then running into a wooded area. Just like in previous footage, the man in the video was wearing a large duffel bag. On May 27th, several solid leads emerged about Peter's location. A man caught on camera at a Chambersburg, Pennsylvania convenience store matched Peter's description. He was carrying the now infamous large black duffel bag, and the stolen Hyundai Santa Fe was located nearby. As reported by the Connecticut Post, a Pennsylvania traffic camera showed the same man getting dropped off by an Uber just over the Maryland state border in Hagerstown. Authorities knew that Peter could not get far on foot. It was crucial to narrow in on their target before he could hire another rideshare or steal another vehicle. Just before 10 p.m. on the night of the 27th, Peter Manfredonia was finally tracked down. According to CNN, an investigator being briefed on Peter's description pointed out a man of his height close by. The side profile of the man also matched photos that had been captured of Peter throughout the investigation. Members of the investigative team rushed over to the man with guns drawn, ordering him to get on the ground. No use of force was necessary, and Peter surrendered without incident. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Nothing is more annoying than having an exciting day planned only to wake up to bad allergies. First world problems, I know, but sometimes allergies ruin my entire day. If you suffer from allergies, I know you understand my struggle. No one wants to go through the day sounding like they're talking underwater. Luckily, we have Astapro. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Between my daughter's school events, Zoom meetings, and podcast recording sessions, I don't have time to deal with allergy issues. And who wants to listen to a podcast when I sound like this? Luckily, you don't have to, because I use Astapro for quick and effective relief. You're welcome. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Summer's just around the corner, and establishing healthy habits has never been easier with the top-rated meal kit for clean eating, Green Chef. Recognized as the leading choice for clean eating and ranked number one meal kit overall by U.S. News & World Report, Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with minimal processing, featuring options with low added sugar and sodium for guilt-free dining. With over 80 flavor-packed choices each week, you can effortlessly tailor your meals to fit your lifestyle, whether it's keto, plant-based, Mediterranean, gut and brain health, calorie smart, quick and easy, protein-packed, or gluten-free. Plus, Green Chef provides the flexibility to mix and match meals from different dietary preferences, ensuring a diverse and satisfying menu. Enjoy chef-crafted, nutritionist-approved recipes brimming with clean ingredients, complemented by organic fresh produce and responsibly sourced proteins, including sustainable seafood and antibiotic-free chicken. Green Chef takes the hassle out of meal prep, offering dinner in just 30 minutes and lunch in 10, with pre-measured ingredients and pre-made custom sauces included in every kit. And Green Chef is committed to sustainability, offsetting 100% of delivery emissions and plastic usage in each box. By partnering with Plastic Bank, Green Chef collects ocean-bound plastic pound for pound, with every delivery, making conscious eating choices even more impactful. With Green Chef, I look forward to knowing dinner is pre-planned and pre-measured, so I can spend more quality time with my family. Go to greenchef.com/murderish50 and use code murderish50 to get 50% off, plus 20% off your next 2 months. Six days into the tense multi-state manhunt, Peter Manfredonia was finally taken into custody by U.S. Marshals and the FBI. With that, his terrifying and deadly crime spree came to a close. At a court hearing the next day, Peter waived extradition and willingly complied with a request from Connecticut prosecutors to be returned to his home state. He was held on $5 million bail and charged with six offenses: murder, first-degree kidnapping, first-degree robbery in connection with the killing of Nick Aisley, and the kidnapping of Shannon Spies. An additional $7 million bail was linked to charges connected to the murder of Ted Demers and the attempted murder of John Franco. Peter's capture dominated headlines from Connecticut to Maryland. Instead of dwelling on the crimes he'd committed or the manhunt for him, headlines focused on the victims and their families. Cindy Demers, whose husband had been killed while helping Peter, told Fox News about a serendipitous moment. A family friend informed Cindy of a letter that Ted had written on his computer in case anything ever happened to him. Cindy told Fox News Ted had written, "Cindy, just keep moving forward." While reading that final letter, breaking news revealed that Peter was apprehended. "I was doing a happy dance," Cindy told Fox. The Demers family issued a statement mourning Ted's death. As quoted by CNN, it read, "As his family, we will forever cherish the memories we made with him in his 62 years of life. He was always so proud of his family, and it's our time now to be proud of him. We believe that his heroic actions and good citizenship may have saved the lives of others." During questioning about the Ted Demers murder, Peter confirmed the girl he dated lived in Ted's neighborhood. As reported by the Hartford Courant, Peter told investigators he planned to commit suicide in front of his ex-girlfriend. But prosecutors theorized Peter actually meant to harm the girl who slighted him. Ted Demers had simply gotten in the way. State investigators struggled to identify a motive for the killing of Nick Aisley. It seems Peter's reason for targeting his former classmate all came down to money. Peter had reason to believe Nick would have a large amount of cash in his home, which was accurate. It defied logic that Peter decided to fatally shoot Nick when he could have easily robbed him at gunpoint and let him live. Peter's own family found his actions appalling. Michael Dolan, a lawyer hired by the Manfredonia family, expressed how much Peter's actions shocked his loved ones. Dolan told the Times Tribune, "This came as a total surprise to everybody based on Peter's past. He's been a kind-hearted person who has no history of violence or any trouble with the law." In a series of court hearings, Peter appeared emotionless and pleaded not guilty to all charges. His lawyer planned on a mental illness defense, since Peter was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and anxiety. Maybe a psychotic episode of some kind had caused Peter to lose his grip on reality. Given the amount of evidence stacked against him, however, swaying a jury in his favor would be a major challenge. By February 2023, Peter had changed his plea to guilty. As quoted by the Sentinel, Peter's lawyer, Michael Dolan, told the Associated Press, "Peter and I explored various defenses, and this was Peter's choice on how to resolve the case." State's attorney, Matthew Gdansky, told Fox News, the decision to support a plea bargain only came after months of discussions with the victims and their families. The consensus was they wanted to put the entire ordeal behind them so the grieving process could truly begin. Say goodbye to frizz and hello to chic and fabulous hair. Way's brand spanking new anti-frizz cream is chef's kiss. This lightweight cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It's been a game changer for me. I simply apply it to damp hair before styling, and then I have frizz-free hair that feels weightless and looks so chic, if I do say so myself. Plus, the Sydney-inspired North Bondi scent is to die for. I have a thing for my hair smelling good. Way's anti-frizz cream has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, and violet. The scent is next level. According to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looked less frizzy after using it. Way's anti-frizz cream does double duty by also shielding my hair from heat damage up to 450 degrees. And let's not forget about Way's other fabulous products. From their leave-in conditioner, which I love, to their detox shampoo, hair oil, and hair gloss, they've got everything you need to keep your hair looking and feeling its best. So why wait? Get busy being frizz-free with Way's new anti-frizz cream today. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code MURDERISH for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code MURDERISH. On April 19th, 2023, Peter Manfredonia was held accountable for the murder of Nick Aisley and the abduction of Shannon Spies. The next day, he answered for the murder of Ted Demers, the attempted murder of John Franco, and the home invasion of Donald Hipsky. For each set of crimes, the defendant agreed to serve two prison terms of 55 years due to run concurrently. As reported by Fox News, as a condition of his plea bargains, Peter also agreed not to seek early release by requesting parole or a sentence modification. The hearing for Nick Aisley's murder was attended by many of his friends and family members. His mother, Michelle Krasowski, had visited her son just a few days before his death. She was so emotionally distraught, someone else had to read her victim impact statement aloud. As quoted by the Hartford Courant, Michelle said, "It takes all the strength and will I can muster to get up, put my feet on the ground, and fight to find the courage to face another day, carrying around the Mack truck worth of grief on my shoulders, the grief that runs through every part of me." Then it was Shannon's turn to face her abductor and the man responsible for killing the man she loved. According to CNN, Shannon expressed the hope that her words would forever haunt Peter. Then she said, "I won't lie. This plea deal does nothing for me except close the door on the court case. The damage can never be undone. None of this brings Nick back or makes me feel whole again. I will never be the person I was before then. I will never feel safe, even in a room surrounded by only people I know. I will always look at the world differently." The convicted killer delivered a public apology to the Aisley family for his destructive actions. According to the Hartford Courant, Peter said, "My actions were nothing short of reprehensible. What I did was inexcusably horrendous, and I will regret it every day for the rest of my life, not because of the consequences it has had on me, but because of the consequences it has had on your family. Nick was a good young man with whom I felt no ill will or malice. My actions were senseless." A similar apology was read by Peter the next day to the Demers family. Also appearing in court for the second plea hearing was John Franco, the elderly neighbor who'd tried to intervene when Ted was attacked. Ted's widow, Cindy, and John Franco himself made their hatred for Peter abundantly clear. Connecticut does not practice capital punishment, yet both Cindy and John believed Peter deserved the death penalty. Before a packed courtroom, Cindy Demers described the carnage outside her home the day her husband was savagely killed with a sword. In an emotional statement quoted by Yahoo News, Cindy explained, "It was like being in a war zone. All I could focus on was reassuring Ted that he was going to be okay and we would put his body back together. We had gotten through so much together up until this point. My husband's life was stolen from him viciously. My world as I knew it came to an end." It's doubtful we'll ever know exactly why a seemingly decent human being would take such a drastic and dark turn and commit such vicious crimes. One could present various theories. Maybe he experienced a psychotic episode. Maybe he was lashing out over his father's wrongdoings. Or perhaps he simply could not handle rejection and misdirected his rage toward others who paid dearly. Whatever the reason, it likely doesn't matter much to the victim's loved ones. Ted Demers and Nick Aisley paid the ultimate price, and their loved ones were stripped of the ability to have them in their lives. An answer as to why this person committed these crimes isn't going to bring back Ted or Nick. Shannon Spies, John Franco, and Donald Hipsky escaped with their lives, but the damage inflicted on them emotionally is impossible to measure and will likely last a lifetime. But memories also last a lifetime, and that's something that no person can ever take away from another. The memories created with Ted Demers and Nick Aisley during their time on Earth will live on forever in the minds of those who had the pleasure of knowing them and loving them. Make sure to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening to Murderish so you don't miss any new episodes. If you enjoy Murderish, please consider leaving a 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now. I'll be on Podcast Row at CrimeCon from May 31st to June 2nd, 2024. The event is being held in Nashville this year. If you're planning to attend CrimeCon 2024, use code MURDERISH at checkout for 10% off a standard badge. CrimeCon is always a blast. I've been attending for 6 years now, and it never disappoints. Use code MURDERISH at crimecon.com for a 10% discount off a standard badge. Hope to see you there. Are you watching a lot of true crime documentaries and want a community of like-minded people to talk about them with? Join the True Crime TV Club I started. We call ourselves the Serial Streamers, and we meet in my Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube comments a couple times a month to dish about all the crazy true crime docs we're watching together. If you want to join Serial Streamers, all you have to do is follow me on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at Jamie On Air. That's J-A-M-I On Air. And then just watch for videos about the latest TV series we're watching together so you can join us in the comments and share your thoughts. I also do a recap of all the documentaries we watch together on Murderish. A couple Fridays a month, new Serial Streamers episodes are released on Murderish, the podcast, and on my YouTube channel. I'm at Jamie On Air on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube if you'd like to join the community. This episode was researched and written by Allison Schwartz. Visit murderish.com for a list of sources used for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, listening to this podcast doesn't make you a murderer. It just means you're murder-ish. Hey, Murderish listeners, I need your help with a missing person. 12-year-old Ruby Ibarra was last seen on July 23rd, 2023 in Dallas, Texas. She's described as Hispanic with brown hair and brown eyes, between 5'1" and 5'2", and weighing around 140 pounds. Any information on Ruby's whereabouts should be reported to the Dallas PD at 214-671-4268.